Let's open our Bible to 2 Kings chapter 3. We'll read all the 27 verses of 2 Kings 3. Now, Jeroboam, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel and Samaria. The 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and reigned 12 years. And he, Jeroboam, wrought evil in the sight of the Lord, but not like his father Ahab and his mother Jezebel. For he reformed just a little bit. He put away the image of Baal that his father had made. Nevertheless, he clave unto the sins of Jeroboam, the sin of Nebat, which made Israel to sin, and he departed not therein. Remember, I made reference every time that you read that. He makes references just like this. That's the standard of wickedness. Jeroboam was the first king of the ten northern kingdoms. And he's the one who set up the golden calf. And the reason he did that was he said it's convenient. But what he really intended, he did not want those northern tribes to go to Jerusalem, the place where the altar's at, the place where the sacrifice. They did it in control, but they justified themselves in doing it. He may have reformed just a little bit, but he still, you know, wouldn't give up the things that Jeroboam did, you know. That's what he did. Verse 4, and Mesha, the king of Moab, was a sheepmaster. And he rendered unto the king of Israel 100,000 lambs and 100,000 rams with the wool. That's a lot of lambs and a lot of rams. And it's kind of ironic, the beginning of this book, 2 Kings, which, you know, they were all really one book, verse 1 of chapter 1, then Moab rebelled against Israel after the death of Ahab. Now that he's dead, they're going to rebel. So basically what this is saying here, they say, we're not going to pay taxes anymore. We're not going to give our wool, we're not going to give our lambs, we're not going to give them to you. We've made it, we're not going to do it. And they rebelled, that's what they did. Against this king, this wicked, vile king. It's all in the family. It's Ahab. And remember, the other son didn't live long, and he's already dead, his brother. And now this one reigns. But they rebelled, verse 5, and it came to pass. But it came to pass when Ahab was dead that the king of Moab rebelled against the king of Israel. And it always will come to pass. And King Jeroboam went out of Samaria the same time and numbered all Israel. And he went and sent to Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah. We've already seen Jehoshaphat a couple of times. You remember how that Ahab, they were friends. The one reason they were friends, they were in-laws together, because I think it is Jehoshaphat's son married the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. When Ahab asked him, just like here, would you go with me to Ramoth-Gilead to go into battle? And Jehoshaphat said, yeah, I'll go. And he almost got killed. The only reason he didn't get killed is God protected him. God kept him. But said it, he went to Jehoshaphat, verse 7, and the king of Judah, saying, the king of Moab hath rebelled against me. Will you go with me against Moab to battle? He said, I'll go up. I am as thou art, my people as thy people, and my horses are as thy horses. And he asked Jehoshaphat, well, which way shall we go up? What's the best way to attack Moab? That's what he's saying. And he answered, the best way to go is the way through the wilderness of Edom. They're going to come up, maybe sneak upon them. But the main reason was they wanted to go to Edom is because they wanted to gain more men, the Edomites. So the king of Israel went, and the king of Judah, and the king of Edom. And they fetched a compass of 7 days' journey, and there was no water for the host. Imagine going 7 days. This is your plan. This is the way we're going to go attack the enemy. But they didn't take this into consideration. There ain't much water in a desert. You imagine how they think now, but we're in a mess now. We didn't see this coming. And this is Jehoshaphat that comes up with this plan. He is a believer. But it's amazing how God allows us, even in our own depravity, to make decisions at times when we realize that, man, we're in a mess. And it's of our own making. This is where they're at. This is what this chapter is about. They're without water. There was no water for the host. There was no water for the cattle. There was no water. And the king of Israel said, Jehoram, alas, watch what he did. The Lord hath caused these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab. You know what he's saying? He's blaming God for their situation. We're here because of God's providence. Well, that is somewhat true, because God rules over all things. But here, it's their own fault. But isn't how quick men like to do? Well, that's like Adam did. He said, Lord, the woman you gave me. The woman you gave me. How are we going to explain this? Well, the Lord's brought these three kings down here to kill them. Trying to ease their guilty conscience. No, it's their own fault. Their own fault. Why didn't they seek the Lord? Nowhere in those verses, those first nine verses, do I see that anybody sought God. Nobody sought direction from God. The Lord said, okay, you go right ahead. You go right ahead. Verse 11. Thank goodness for a but. You see the situation they were in. But Jehoshaphat said, is there not here a prophet of the Lord, that we may inquire of the Lord by him? You remember when he told Ahab, he said, is there not any prophets but these false prophets? And Ahab said, yeah, there's one named Micah, but I don't much like him because he never prophesies good for me. And Jehoshaphat said, well, let's see what he has to say. And now Jehoshaphat says, is there not a man of God here? Is there not someone that we can inquire of God by? Oh, thank goodness that Jehoshaphat, a picture of us, though we fall, he still preserves us. He said that we may inquire of the Lord by him. And one of the king of Israel's servants answered and said, here is Elisha. And as I read that, why is Elisha here? Isn't that kindly odd? That in all this group of people, Elisha just happens to be there. We know why he's there. God put him there. He's not there as the chaplain. He's not there. He's probably, they don't even know it, but one man said, well, I've seen Elisha. He's the man of God. He's the one that washed the hands of Elijah or poured water on the hands of Elijah. Now, verse 12. And Jehoshaphat said, the word of the Lord is with him. He's basically saying, if God's going to speak to us and show, what are we going to do? What are we going to do in this pickle? What are we going to do with that water? He said, the Lord speaks through this man. So the king of Israel, don't you see this? And Jehoshaphat and the king of Edom went down to him. They have to come off of their high horse. And Elisha didn't go to them. They had to go to him. We'll see that on in chapter 5 when Naaman, the Syrian, the leper, Elisha didn't go to him. He didn't even go to him when he's standing on his front porch. He came to where he was at. Where he was at. Can you imagine? They're standing outside and I can see Elisha. He walks out and here stands these three kings. The king of Edom, the king of Israel, and Jehoshaphat. And Elisha said to the king of Israel, now he looks and he picks this man out. He knows who this wicked, vile king is. He knows who his daddy is. He knows who his mom is. And he knows what's in his heart. What have I to do with you? What do I have to do with you? Why did you come to ask of me? Get to your own prophets. Won't you go talk to your daddy's false prophets? Go talk to your mama's false prophets. What have I got to do with you? And to the prophets of thy mother, and the king of Israel said to him, Nay, for the Lord hath caused these kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab. There he goes again. We're blaming it on the Lord. And Elisha says, as the Lord of hosts liveth, before whom I stand, were it not that I regarded the presence of Jehoshaphat, I would not look toward thee, or I would not see thee. The only reason I'm talking to you three men is because of Jehoshaphat. It's only because of Christ. That's the only reason God preserved him. He said that's the only reason, and he wanted them to know it. I'd say he was prayed up and just come out and say it, but he's probably a little upset that Jehoshaphat's put himself in this pickle. Can you imagine what think you go? What's he doing here with this guy? You know, come on. But don't you see this? Verse 15, but now bring me a minstrel. And it came to pass when the minstrel played that the hand of the Lord came upon Elisha. And he said, thus saith the Lord, make this valley full of ditches. Here's the remedy. This is what God speaks to Elisha. Make the valley full of ditches. For thus saith the Lord, ye shall not see wind, neither shall ye see rain, that the valley shall be filled with water, that ye may drink, both ye and your cattle and your beast. And this is but a little, this is but a light thing in the sight of the Lord. He will deliver the Moabites also into your hand. And you shall smite every fenced city and every choice city, and you shall fell every good tree and stop all wells of water and mar every good piece of land with stones. And it came to pass in the morning. You know, if this happened the next day, they must have dug a whole lot of ditches, because it said in the morning. He said, you go dig ditches. That's the remedy, digging ditches. Yep. Fill the whole valley with ditches. And basically as many ditches as you dig are going to be filled with water. It's like when Elisha tells the woman, you remember her husband's dead and how she's going to pay the bills that she owes. He said, you go borrow as many empty vessels as you can find. And the oil did not stay as long as there was one empty vessel. Every ditch you dig is going to be filled. And the next morning, it came to pass in the morning, when the meat offering was offered, a picture of Christ and his sacrificial death, that behold, there came water by the way of Edom, and the country was filled with water. And when the Moabites heard that the kings were come up to fight against them, they gathered all that were able to put on armor and upward and stood in the border. And they rose up early in the morning, and the sun shone on the water. And the Moabites saw the water on the other side, not as water, but they perceived it as red as blood. To one it is life, to the other it perceives death. And they said, this is the blood, this is blood. The kings are surely slain. They've killed each other and they've smitten one another. Now therefore, Moab, to the spoil. Let's go get the spoil. They're all dead. But when they came to the camp of Israel, the Israelites rose up and smote the Moabites, so that they fled before them, but they went forward, smiting the Moabites, even into their own country. And they beat down the cities, and on every good piece of land cast every man his stone, and he filled it. And they stopped all the wells of water, felled all the good trees, only in Kirjath left they the stones thereof. Howbeit, the slingers went about it and smote it. And when the king of Moab saw that the battle was too sore for him, he took with him 700 men that drew swords to break through even unto the king of Edom, but they could not. So what did he do? And he took his eldest son that should have reigned in his stead, he's the heir to the throne, and he offered him for a burnt offering upon the wall. And there was a great indignation against Israel, and they departed from him and returned to their own land. Hear this picture of Joram going to war against Moab. And because of that, God reveals his glory and his grace. This is what we see in the salvation of his people. Jehoshaphat just happens to be there. Thank goodness he was there. Thank goodness he was there. Back in 1 Chronicles 18, verse 2, how did Moab become subjects to Israel? And David smote Moab, and the Moabites became David's servants and brought their gifts. I think it was Gil or someone I read behind that they've been the servants of Israel for about 150 years. That's a long time. And they said, you know what? We've been waiting for this opportunity. David's not reigning over Israel anymore. A bunch of wicked, vile kings are. We ain't putting up with it no more. We ain't giving our sheep. We ain't giving our fur. And then he goes toward Jehoshaphat and he asks him. And Jehoshaphat, as I said, as we read the scripture, he come up with the plan. He come up with the plan. This is what we're going to do. And as wicked men do, that's what they always will do. Men apart from God's grace, they always blame it on God. On God. It's their own fault. Their own fault. They're suffering for it. It didn't matter who had sought. They didn't seek the Lord. They'd made up their own plans. And this is what men do. They think, they say it will work. It didn't work, did it? Their plan, everybody's going to thirst to death. What are we going to do? Now, just put yourself in their place. What are we going to do now? Is God just going to leave us alone? Thank goodness there's somebody in the crowd we don't know that's there. His name's Elisha. Isn't that grace in itself? It's amazing how that Elijah and Elisha's ministry is so different. Elijah, we know that God hit him, but then at those certain times, he's got Elisha. You read it and you go, why is he here? Why did he go with them? Maybe somebody asked him. I don't know, but he's here for a reason. But thank goodness, finally, they called on God. I want you to see this. Sometimes, now this is usually how it is. Sometimes it's not till we get in a mess that we call on God. It shouldn't be that way, but that's most of the time, that's how it is. We go, man, I knew better than that. I've made the same stupid decision over and over and over again, and here we go again. Though a righteous man fall 7 times, God still upholds him. He upholds him. Seek his guidance. What are we to do? We should rise each day and say, Lord, what are we to do? In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. He will keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed upon thee. And Elisha, he has about that much patience for that king of Israel. That's it. We're going to see, don't you see, he gets upset. He's not laughing about it. I can see him look that man right square in the eyes. He said, what are you doing here? Why don't you go ask your false preachers? Why don't you go ask them? That's what basically how he said it. And he meant it. He did it mockingly. Kind of like Elijah said, well, where's you got it? Maybe your God's asleep. Maybe you just need to wake him up. Maybe he's on a far trip or something. You know why he could say that? Because they worship in a dead God. But I want you to see, I want to spend a few moments on this. He called for minstrels to play some music. Why did he do that? Just like you, he needed to be calmed down, and he knew it. You ever feel like you just stirred up? He's upset. You know what we see? You can see him, whether he was right in telling this guy, but you know, it's hard to separate that point when it becomes sin, and he knew it. How can I now speak for God? When my mind is like this, when I'm so upset, he's basically upset. and he calls for what has calmed him before. He said, is there a minstrel here? Is there one of the sons of Levi who can play upon a stringed instrument? I need to settle my heart. I need to settle my mind. What I need the mind of God. This is not something to be taken lightly. I can see him when he said, what's he wanting a minstrel for? Why does he want somebody to play on a harp for? He said, when they played, the minstrel played. The hand of God came upon him. Where do we find a similar passage like this to illustrate or to interpret this passage for us? 1 Samuel 16, talking about King Saul. Now, King Saul, he's a lost man, but he's a religious man. You get that. It's not that he's not religious. He's very religious, but he's lost. And in this same chapter, to go back and read earlier, I think it's in verse 14, it talks about the Spirit of God had left Saul and an evil spirit had come upon him. Well, what does that mean? That means his conscience has afflicted him. That's what that means. It bothers him. It bothers him that God's leaving him alone. It's bothering him that God's not going to speak to him anymore. But this is bothering him. So how's he going to be calmed down? And it came to pass when the evil spirit from God came upon Saul, David took a harp and played with his hand. So Saul was refreshed and was well, and the evil spirit departed from him. Can you imagine hearing David play upon that harp? Not only play, but imagine hearing him sing. And as I thought about this, what is one of the prime songs men always go to, even men that don't know God, especially at funerals, they all sing Amazing Grace. And there's nothing that to me that sounds any prettier, especially if it's someone that's died in service or he's a policeman or something, when they play those bagpipes. And they're not singing, but they just playing. I tell you, it blesses my heart. But what I'm seeing, even a lost man can be affected by that, and it's still not changing. That song that old slave trader wrote, Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound, that saved a wretch like me. He could have said, would you sing me one of the songs of Zion? Would you play me Psalms 23, the Lord is my shepherd? Gets his mind off everything else. His mind needs to be on the shepherd. And any other stuff, that's it. Our minds, as I prayed, our minds need to be calmed down. He was upset. He was upset. And even King Saul said he was refreshed. I didn't look up the word, but he was calmed down. At one time, that's why he loved David. It was. He played for Saul. The Spirit of God came to Elisha to give him direction on what he was to do. When he was cast down, when we are cast down and our souls are troubled, what are we to do? I know someone a while back wanted a CD with some good gospel songs on. If you're going to look to what men, we used to love Southern gospel because we loved old country music, and that's what it is. They take bluegrass or whatever, and they put the tunes. And there's some of them that are excellent. I could give you singers have a beautiful voice and cast everything aside. You just listen to the words, and it has blessed my heart. But what do we do when we're troubled? Now, the minstrels can represent many things. It can represent songs. I can tell you, there's been more than once we just sit down between Sunday school and preaching and Miss Linda come up there and just sit down. And she just plays. And what that does, we need to calm down. And it is blessed just hearing her play. Just hearing her play. Why do we sing? Why do we read the scriptures and pray? Why do we sing? To focus our minds upon him that loved us and gave himself for us. So it's not just in songs, but even coming to God's word. Getting alone with the Lord. Everything wants to distract you. I guarantee you this, because I know you're just like me. You're depraved just like I am. Everything in this world would keep you from this book. Everything. Even if you try to sit down and read, if you're not careful, I didn't even know I was going to sleep. I didn't realize that I was that drowsy. Is that just me? And we come and say, Lord, I need a word from you. Or we may sit down and listen to a message. You know, you have to get still. Elisha said, bring me a minstrel. Someone said, music soothes the savage beast, calms them down. You know, I've seen people I used to see men who would work, and they'd get busy working, and they'd whistle while they worked. They'd just happy. I remember when Caitlin was just little, she was probably 7 or 8 years old, and where we lived, you know, the driveways were pretty long. There was like four of us lived there on this property. And she had I bought her a little four-wheeler, and she'd put her little helmet on, and she'd ride, and she'd sing. And her aunt said one day, she said, she's a happy little girl. Why did she sing? Because her heart was filled with joy. She didn't have a worry in the world. Let me give you a couple of scriptures. Philippians 5, verse 18 through 20. And be not drunk with wine, wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things unto God and the Father, in the name of Jesus Christ. You imagine Paul and Silas, I thought about them. In Acts 16, they've been beaten for preaching the gospel. And it had been awful easy to sit and feel sorry for each other. And something I see here, not what I'm just getting ready to mention, but they needed each other. This is another way of God sending us somebody. We was able this week to spend some time with some people. And I tell you, it blessed my heart. We need each other. I know this virus has tried to keep us apart, and we have to do what we can do to protect each other. But, you know, we do need each other. We all face the same things. Well, we come in, how are you doing? Well, how are you doing? They were beaten for preaching the gospel. They were in a situation. But what did they do? Thank goodness they had each other. At midnight, Paul and Silas prayed. And sang praises unto God. And the prisoners heard them. There's other men in the same situation they're in. You know why they're put into prison? That's why. They were there because the Lord had brought them there. And Elisha's here because God has brought him here. These people are watching him. What's he doing? What are those men doing? Well, I think that one's praying. He's not praying to some false god. He's praying to a man named Jesus. He's praying to one that sits on the throne. He's praying to that one that they said risen from the dead. And the prisoners heard him. And suddenly there was a great earthquake, so that the fountains of the prison were shaken. And immediately all their doors were open, and everyone's bands were loose. Wouldn't you like to be in a situation like that? Where God opened the doors, and everybody's bands fall, everybody's loosed? We're not talking about how many wounds we've got for preaching the gospel. They begin to pray. And sing praises. Can you imagine? Can you imagine all that's going on? All this army. I can see them complaining. How are we going to get some water? It's God's fault we're here. All these things are going on in his mind. And here's how I see it. I see it as they begin to play. I see a hush come over the whole bunch. And he listens. And now God speaks to him. The Lord speaks to him. What did he say, do? We need to dig some ditches. You go, where in the world? Dig some ditches. We're without water and you want us to dig some ditches. You ever dug a ditch? If you ever have, you'll remember it, that's for sure. It's very, very hard work. The word from the Lord was for these thirsty men to dig ditches in this valley. They're tired. They're thirsty. He said, you dig the ditches, and I'm going to fill them ditches with water. You're not going to hear any wind. You're not going to hear any thunder. And you're not going to see any rain. But I'm going to fill them ditches. And they dig the ditches before the water ever come. They dig the ditches in anticipation of the water coming. How's he going to do this? He does it. And this is not how he did it in the days of Elijah. Before God sent the rain, Elijah goes and looks for a cloud, and he said, I see the cloud about the size of a man's hand. And then all of a sudden, the sky gets dark. He hears the thunder, and then the rain came. Not here with Elisha. You can't put God in a box. God moves in his own way. He displays his power. But in both instances, who got the glory? The Lord did. You mean even in situations like this? Oh, yeah. Why are Paul and Silas beaten? Why are they cast into prison? I tell you why. At midnight, they're going to sing praises and they're going to give thanks to God. All this work is just a light thing to God. He said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to give you water, which is going to be life to you, but it's going to be death to the Moabites. Isn't it amazing? He's going to protect and save his people, and he's going to destroy the enemy. They didn't destroy him. He did. And it's the time of this happened at the time of the morning sacrifice. What a picture of our Lord. After the long night, they may have dug ditches all night. I don't know. If you were there and you really believed that God was going to send water, when you stayed up all night? If you really believed it, what are you doing? I'm digging a ditch. What's a ditch? It's a place where water will go, where water will flow. I'm going to do this to destroy the Moabites. But when the Moabites see this, after the long night, the sun appeared. The ditches in the valleys were filled with water. Can you not see the children of Israel, their hearts just leaping with joy? But the Moabites get up and they look. I picture in my mind them looking back across the valley. And I picture ditches just running everywhere. You know what they look like? They look like veins. And they're filled with water. But it don't look like water to them. The sun is shining on that water and it looks like blood. And they perceive that Israel is dead. Didn't they perceive wrong? God would allow them to interpret what they see, and that will cause and bring their death. Moab says, get your arms together, boys. We're going to go. All we got to do is go down there and pick up the spoil. They're all dead. And that's what they did. When Moab come down to take the spoil, they were routed by the Israelites and fled to their own country. When everything else failed, King Moab gathered 700 of his finest, and they were not successful. And when that didn't work, you know what he did? He killed his own son. Sacrificed his own son. Sacrificed the heir to the throne to make an atonement for his sin. What are we to learn from this story? The water in the blood reminds us of Christ and his death. One of the soldiers with us with a spear pierced his side, and forthwith there came out blood and water. Water is often put for life and blood for death. The salvation of God's people and the destruction of the enemy is for a singular person, Jehoshaphat. Preacher, are you saying that God would do all this and record a whole chapter of 27 verses to record for us how he saves his elect? That's exactly what he's saying. You mean everything that's happening in this world has a reason? Yep. What is it? For God's glory and the salvation of his people. That's it. Secondly, Jerome's small religious concession on removing the image of Baal did not change his guilt before God. He continued to do what he set out to do. It never changed his heart. He never repented. Look at what he saw. Look at what he's heard. He drank of the same water they did and still never believed. People can come in here and drink of the same water, the same gospel that you drink, and they still never believe. Still never believe. Something else. You get this point. What is born in the storm will die in the calm. What's born in time of heartache, we would call it deathbed repentance. Men get on their deathbed and they say, well, call the preacher. And he goes in there and he fixes him up. Asks Jesus to save you. And he does. Said, well, everything's okay. He made his peace with God. Well, then he gets up off the bed. He didn't really die. What about the profession? Well, that's all in the past. What was born in the storm will die in the calm. When men get in trouble, they become religious. Knowing how Ahab died, you imagine that being your daddy? Knowing how his brother died and that being your brother, would that not speak to you? So you know what? He's going to reform just a little bit. But it never changed him. Only grace can change a man. You know what happens to this man? He lives for another while. He lives till chapter 9. When a man named Jehu is anointed as king, and Jehu drew a bow with all his full strength, and he smote Jeroboam between his arms, and the arrow went out his heart, and he sunk down in his chariot. You talking about death to a family? That's a picture of all of us if God leaves us alone. Something else. This water that God gave, wasn't that a miracle how he gave it? I think about when he opened up the Red Sea all night long. They couldn't see what God was doing, but God was working. They dug ditches, and I can see them come home. I can see them just wore out. What are we going to do? We're going to lay down. We did what God commanded us to do. He told you to dig the ditch. He never told you to put water in the ditch. He just told you to dig the ditch, and they lay down. And the next morning, water's everywhere. We have life. The enemies of God, the enemies of the gospel, they have a misconception of Christ and him crucified. They perceive that the water in the valley was blood. And this came by reason of light. The morning sun shined on the water and it looked like blood to them. You know what they thought? They thought it was death to their enemies. we've got Jesus Christ, we've crucified him and we've killed him, we've done away with him. They think it's death. It ain't death. It's death to them, but they don't know it. It's life to us. We're the savor of life unto life unto some, unto you that believe, but those that don't believe, it's the savor of death unto death. The light was the source of their perception. The natural man receives not the things of the Spirit of God. It's foolishness to him. They go, what does that mean? I can see someone say, what does that mean? Well, that has to mean death. Surely they're already dead. Boy, wasn't they deceived. That's how men are still deceived. They don't understand. Our Lord gave life to his people by speaking in parables. He said, and in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which saith, by hearing you shall hear, by hearing they shall hear and not understand, and seeing they shall see and not perceive. But to the child of God, the water was life to them. And everyone else benefited because of Jehoshaphat. He blessed Pharaoh because of Joseph, or Potiphar's house because of Joseph. The only reason, you hear me say this all the time, the only reason this world exists for God to save his people. The only reason God raised up that metal plant over on that river was to provide a job for his people. That's right. And when he's done with it, he'll be done with it. Jim basically was forced to retire, worked there 50-some years. And the other people had a job, you know why? Because there was a Jehoshaphat there. Finally, the king of Moab, let me make a point on this, sacrificing his own firstborn son to his false, vengeful god. This is the mind of all men. It produces countless counterfeits of God giving his own firstborn son. What he offered his own son, and it never made atonement for sin. Why do you think it said that they offered unto Moloch their own children? That can't put away sin. But men have the mentality of sacrificing your all, everything rests upon this child, and you're going to sacrifice him? What that man did accomplished nothing. What they do accomplishes nothing. Christ's water and blood satisfied God and redeemed his people. Thank God for thirst and for water, for ditches and for sons, for the blood and death both understood and misperceived. It's in his hands. I hope that's been a help.